Disaster Management, Boxing South Africa. I'm not very sure whether SASCOC is here now. We also are expecting Soul City, SACC, National Council Against Smoking. Those are the people that shall be making submissions, and will then ask questions as members of parliament. And we then have, in fact, I think it is proper that I introduce myself. My name is Cindy, S-I-N-D-I, and my surname is Chikunga. I'm a member of parliament and the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Police. I come from Mpumalanga province, and I'm a South African. I think we allow members and all of us to introduce ourselves, starting with my co-chairperson next to me, and then all of us will follow.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honourable members and visitors. My name is Budana Komhela. I am from the Free State, the only province that is free. All others are not yet. I'm the Chair of Sports and Recreation, and we chair this bill together with the Chair of the Police. Thank you.
Donald Lee, DA Member of Parliament from the Eastern Cape, Port Elizabeth.
Graham McKenzie, Cope, KZN. Thank you.
Cora Dehachi, Western Cape, ANC.
Lindy Wamtsobo, ANC from KwaZulu-Natal.
Good morning, I'm Grace Seke from Mpumalanga, ANC.
Pongwe Mtekazi, Portfolio Committee Research on Sports.
Gideon Bosoff, Legal Advisor, Sport and Recreation South Africa. Director Brad van der Walt, Legal Services, South African Police Service.
Sisa Makabeni, from the Office of Legal Advisor.
I'm Louis Somja, Director of Operations for South Africa, and then in the last 3 months I've also been acting as CEO.
My name is Greg Pillay. I'm the head of his office, Emergency Centre for the City of Cape Town, representing DEMISA at this hearing.
I'm Mr. Dion Adams, the Disaster Management Centre.
The SABC political party want to know it.
Abongwe Kogan SABC.
I'm Thabo Mokone, also SABC.
Jeremy Michael, Committee Secretary to Police.
Mbisi, Safety and Security.
Right at the back of the SABC.
I'm Donna Jensen from the Law Society of South Africa.
Hi, I'm Emil Crimmenden, PMG.
PMG. My friend is a big day.
Hi, I'm Pumla Kambela, Political Research.
Okay. Next to Pumla.
Casey Chetty, Private Business, and Alan.
Mala Matthews here, just as an observer.
Okay.
Anna Majabu, Soweto newspaper.
Wyndham Hartley from Business Day.
Chris McCourty from the Insurance Unit. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you very much for the introductions. We have received apologies from Honorable Greg Schneeman. He has our commitments. Also, Honorable Kola Barnett, Ms. Kola Barnett, she will be joining us late. I think at this stage maybe it is proper to congratulate our two gold medalists, Semenya and Mlauzi, and we regard them as our heroes as a country, and we will be, in fact, looking forward to their coming back to South Africa. At this stage, I think I should hand over to the chairperson to just brief us on the objectives of this safety at sports and recreational events bill, then take presentation from other members.
Thank you, Chair. I think all of us, we're joining South Africans and women in particular in saluting this hero who won the medal in Germany. But Chair, this has not just been something that has excited the world, but it is something that has excited us as a continent, as Africa, and us as South Africans. And therefore, we're part of the people who joined the whole upheaval around the manner in which the international community is doing things around them. We are not part of those communities that are dealing with that matter in that way. A child of 18 years, away from home, with no parents, only with other athletes, and being informed by media that we don't know what are you, whether you are a man or a woman. Completely indispensable for the IWAF to deal with that matter. And therefore, our statement was that we would like the UN Human Rights Commission to get our objection as from tomorrow. We are going to request this committee that we take a resolution in saying to the UN that was a gross violation of a human right on that case. And we think that it must be looked into and thoroughly investigated, and the IWAF must apologize to that girl. And because there are many other people who look like her. And then, but then even if it's one of their protocols to deal with a suspicion when a person looks like anything else, but a protocol cannot say this child first in the morning when she wakes up. She's flooded by newspapers and say, what are you? Can you probably strip off so that we must see what are you? It was completely irresponsible and wrong. In fact, it is just kind of the president of Athletics South Africa, which we hail him in support of the child. Because when I spoke to that child here yesterday, she was very calm, cool, as if there's nothing that is going on with her. She's a very strong girl, I want to say. And when I spoke to her, she was fine. But we think that this matter cannot just be a matter, because it is a matter that it starts with us. It is going to continue staying with us. It is going to be a matter that continues in the day. The old fashion of dealing with the issues of race with the IWAF, I think they need to be revamped in line with the patterns of the world that are changing in respect to women. Our country has the utmost respect to women. And there's no way that we can demean a woman in that way. And therefore, the call that we are doing is that the UN Human Rights Commission must receive our concern, and they must deal with this matter. And they must write and tell us how are they going to deal with this matter, how it has been resolved. And then if it has been resolved, however, they must apologize to this child and Athletic South Africa in the manner in which the matter has been handled. We're totally and completely as a country behind Semenya and all those who win. In fact, I think Athletic South Africa has done very well against the odds. Because yesterday they made another silver medal. And when they are coming there in the country, they are not coming just like anybody else who goes to the Olympic and not bring any other thing. So we congratulate them once more, collectively as this committee. And we also raise our objective, Chairperson, that it was not a good way of handling with it. I think she needed a different manner of handling that matter, and this country needed a different way. And we are pursuing this matter with the UN Human Rights Committee to check and to apologize that there could be a difference. What we are arguing, not arguing that it should be no test, but what we are arguing is that you cannot be handled in that way. The test must be done. It's a trial on media about the sex on that woman, and it can't be like that. It must be done in a proper way. If there are protocols, those protocols must be observed. But if there are protocols that are first flooded by the media, then they must change the protocols. The protocols are completely wrong because Donald Mee cannot hear from anybody else that, hey, we hear that you are going to be charged. When the police is charging Donald Mee on what, has not come to me and say, man, we are charging you, these are things and all that, and then you just hear from the media. I think it's completely not acceptable. Unacceptable. We totally condemn what the IWAF has done to that child. Members, the bill is still the bill that we continue with it. And the members who were not here yesterday, we said the bill seeks to give responsibility to the sports organizers and event organizers. The bill is brought by the government of South Africa during the time of President Mbeki. Firstly, you recall when there was a disaster in Orkney. And those people in Orkney buried their loved ones and the PSL. Pocketed that money. They had nothing to do with 43 people who died in that stadium, and 8 of them later died at the hospital, and the scores of people who got injured in that stadium. Because when the Pirates scored that goal, it was an uproar. Even the number of people, the huge number of people outside, wanted to come in because the ticketing system of allowing them to go in was very slow. And therefore they decided to say, we want to see the second goal scored by Pirates again whilst you are inside watching the game there. And hell broke loose in that stadium. And people died in that stadium. And others are still confined on the wheelchairs in Orkney and Klerksdorp up until today. Then there was an instance of Ellis Park. The Ellis Park instance, again, 43 people died in that incident. But when you listen to all the radios in this country, I'm honest with you, when you listen to all the radios in this country, people who went there to go with a 20 rand to that stadium, and their families have 3 deaths at the goal of the people who were crushed in that stadium, said we don't have means to bury our beloved one. And the people who staged that game at Ellis Park, they have taken the money and put in their pocket, and the responsibility from the public. Not that public, the public is too demanding, but public thinks that there is a way that government has to do, or there is a relationship of government with sports, events, and all those other things. They're justly so, correctly, calling for government and saying,
We don't have money to bury these people. Can you help us? And municipalities who don't even have money had to be drawn in so that at least they must assist those people. And the recent one was here in Ellis Park. Whilst we were on the middle in Cape Town, whilst we were in the middle, first day of handling this bill, a day before, there was a violence occurring in the stadium in Newlands. The seats were uprooted. There was a complete violence there. And then we said, but this is what government is intending to keep as something that when those seats, as we speak, when those seats have been removed there, the municipality of the Western Cape is responsible to go and fit those seats back. Where are the owners of the top eight tournament? The money is just about to get in their pocket because they're playing now the final, and they have nothing to do with repairing the seats that they've been lost there. Cars of people were smashed there. Who's supposed to take responsibility when I have gone on a stadium and an angry lunatic of players goes there and smash any other thing that is there? And from there we must say government must take responsibility. In KwaZulu-Natal, if you can recall, there is this a marathon in KwaZulu-Natal. While people were running in that marathon and roads were blocked, one person decided to get in there. And then six people were died because the car walked on them. And then we're saying these kind of events cannot be events where people are recreating or where people are enjoying sporting. And then there should be a loss of life. One life is but too many. And government say, I think we must stop this. Anybody's organizing the event, there should be a mechanism and process that he has to follow for him to be able to say, yes, the game, the event that you're staging is not a risky event. If it is Pirates playing Kaizer Chiefs, which is very electrified, a game where everybody is going to be there, 80,000 people are there, there are stipulations that has to be there. But there should be ambulances, there should be police, there should be everything. And then in another church, it brought almost 1 million people. But as and when, in the middle of summer, as and when the sun was going up, people were fainting, there was no water, there was a huge dehydration there. We're not saying the church is not, but we're saying simple, basic things. Church must collaborate with the powers that be. There should be some emergency ambulances there if there are 1 million people that are there, and then there should be at least enough water if it is summer, because 1 million of people are outside. They're not in any other closed shelter there. And therefore, water must be there, simple for dehydration, not what we have seen in another church, such thing happening. So government is trying to cap on those things, not to cap putting onerous responsibility to the organizer. But government's interest is about the people of this country who attend those events. In boxing, Comrade Loiso knows in boxing, people are shot there with a gun in one very hot boxing event there. How did that person got into an event with a stadium? It is not the responsibility of Lois who's running up and down. It is the responsibility of security that should happen. But we are saying to them, nobody can come into a boxing tournament with a gun when somebody that he favors most is losing, and then people must be shot in that way by a lunatic who wanted to win at all costs. So questions of search and siege of the guns that get in there and all those other things. We are trying to put them properly in terms of the law, that the question of the siege and seizure will be the responsibility of the police.
And there are other people that were putting in place there, as we call the marshals and the steward and all those other things. We are trying to define and put them in a proper perspective, so that if Honorable Mackenzie understands what the steward is, all of us in the country must understand what the steward is. If it's a marshal, we must understand what it is. And that if there is a certain responsibility, we must know what are those responsibilities are. Myself and Donald Lee happened to use one shuttle. This shuttle has got a passenger liability on the front window. If Donald Lee can pick up an accident during the pickup hour in the morning, it means that taxi has a full responsibility in looking after medical care and all other things. But majority, 99% of the shuttles that members are using here, 99% is just a small car of the family, because it's got a license, it's a small car, and then it walks into Parliament and people jump into that car, and then it doesn't have passenger liability. Something that we want is that kind of a situation. It cannot be passenger liability or what, but we want the liability taken by the organizers of the events in these big events that they are organizing, so that our people must feel secured, our people must not be running up and down and do not know who is responsible for that. But one thing that government will never allow is to allow football people, rugby people, and everybody to maximize their income and obliterate the life of the spectators when they've gone to those stadiums. We're not going to allow that at all. They must take full responsibility. Whilst they are maximizing income, they must know that at least there are lives of the people that are at stake at the stadium there. I think when we started UFC, even international, there are people who were falling from 7-meter heights, falling down because the stadium was burning, and then they could not go that side. The only place that they could buy, he thought that if he jumped from a 7-meter height, he's going to survive. Others broke their neck, others survived, I don't know how, but it was a pandemonium, it was chaos, and therefore we're trying to close those kind of things. But we cannot close those things without getting your views as members of the civil society, as members of the federation, of members who are in charge with sporting codes where you are. I think, Chairperson, that is exactly what the bill is all about. And then you have to tell us what are the challenges that are there. You have to make an input and say, but on this clause, Chair, this is difficult. And then so that we must ask questions and then and see. The law in this country is made and shaped by you. If we understand what you say, we will try to meet what you are saying. But if you don't understand what you are saying, we will go on doing this law in the manner in which ourselves was firstly conceptualized as the law that has to protect spectators and people at the stadium. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Before we take presentations from, we're going to take disaster management first. I think I want to agree with you, Chairperson, to saying I think we have to express our disgust and disappointment in the manner which is so unethical in which the manner Semenya matter was handled. We believe that the matter itself is very sensitive, and as such, basic principles such as privacy and confidentiality should be observed at all costs. When procedures that are so invasive are conducted, that can actually change the person's view about herself, I think there are principles that must be observed. And we think the manner in which it has been handled, it is insulting that young woman, but I think it is insulting all of us as women. We still view her as our hero, and she remains a woman as far as we are concerned as women of South Africa. I agree with you, Chairperson, that we definitely need an apology, but I think she also needs an apology. It cannot be that an invasive procedure such as this one goes to media before a person is even made aware. It cannot be true. I think it is wrong, and it remains very wrong. I will therefore now take a presentation from disaster management. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I indicated earlier, my name is Craig Pillay. I'm the head of disaster management for the City of Cape Town, but I am here this morning representing the Disaster Management Institute of Southern Africa, also known as DEMISA. I'd like to commence by saying that we noted that disaster management is listed both as an emergency and as an essential service in the definitions of emergency services and essential services. Disaster management has as a strategic risk reduction and preparedness coordination duty and can become involved in emergency management or major incidents and can also be regarded as an essential service in terms of risk monitoring and early warning role where the provision of essential and line function services are concerned. Disaster management also has considerable value as a single coordination point for municipal emergency and essential services. It's because of this that disaster management cannot be listed exclusively under emergency or essential services. Essential services, secondly, are not always within the administration of a local authority, as is assumed in the definition of essential services. In more rural areas, electricity, for example, could be delivered by ESCOM, while other essential services, such as waste management, could be privatized. It is proposed that the definition of essential services also provide for the other services by other spheres of government other than local authorities, because for this matter, the parastatals or private sector can also be involved. The same definition can be interpreted to significant numbers of large churches, conferences, venues, halls, and multipurpose auditoria. This could create problems relating to the expected volume of events that the National Commissioner may need to consider. Owners of such venues will also have a new legal obligation and administrative duty that they will need to be informed of. If the large volume will not be a problem, then no change is necessary. If the volume would present a problem, the definition needs to be refined. The definition of venue excludes stadia, while the definition of the VOC or the VOC, Venue Operations Center, applies to stadiums as well. This is not a problem in itself, but the definition of the VOC, the Venue Operations Center, then becomes confusing and it becomes ambiguous. A stadium requires a Venue Operations Center, but is not considered to be a venue. So we suggest, therefore, that you need to include stadiums in the definition of venue as the wider concept, or the possible confusion can be avoided by renaming the VOC to an Event Safety and Security Operations Center, an ESOC, or some other more appropriate name. The venue definition can be interpreted to include significant numbers of large churches, as we said, concert halls and multipurpose auditoria, as well as schools and communities, sports fields, and parks. Also, while the minimum limit of 2,000 is good because it puts a lowest limit on events that needs to be planned for and which will result in administrative and operational commitments by the state, the list of excluded private events as visited in Section 15 may further reduce that burden on the state. However, the argument that an event hosting 60,000 spectators may result in no injuries, while a smaller event hosting less than 2,000 spectators may result in many fatalities, still holds water. One only has to consider the numerous incidents of fires in nightclubs and other venues as an example. If smaller high-risk venues will not be covered by this legislation, it would be beneficial to at least refer to other legislation that does not apply to such smaller events, such as the occupational health and safety and other legislation. This should serve to discourage event organizers from trying to keep their attendance just below 2,000 so that they can avoid additional expenses and burdens. The Safety at Sports and Recreational Events Act should be seen as an additional measure applying to bigger events which are already governed by existing safety legislation. If we look at Chapter 2, Section 5, in the event of a medium and a high risk determination by the Commissioner, it would be evident that should an incident occur that may be considered a disaster after it has been initially assessed, in that instance the provisions of the Act may no longer apply and the provisions of the Disaster Management Act now become relevant. It then stands to reason that when the Commissioner considers a high or medium risk classification, that the Commissioner must, prior to the classification, consult with the Municipal Disaster Management Center
in whose jurisdiction the event is to occur. The above has impact on other sections of the bill as well. Furthermore, also the head of a municipal or a provincial or a national disaster management center must have the necessary training, qualifications, and experience to consider the above risks. Standards and requirements should be set for all persons who may have responsibility to classify an event. One can assume that the definitions of venue and stadium, which refer to a minimum capacity of 2,000, does establish a lower limit of applicability. No such lower limit seems to apply to routes, though, we note. There may still be room for interpreting this section as applied to any other planned events, and that every event, irrespective of its size, should be submitted to the Commissioner, and that the Minister would need to be informed of the categorization or the refusal of categorization for every single one of these incidents. This would obviously place an unwelcome burden on the state. That is our contention. Establishing a minimum spectator or participant number for events to which this legislation would apply could be seen as ignoring the fact that small events may also be high-risk events. A minimum level for the applicability of this legislation needs to be determined based on easily recognizable risk indicators other than only the number of spectators. This in turn would mean that this commissioner would have to consider a risk classification which may be outside he or her security proficiency and which is founded in the realm of disaster management. We now look at Section 2, Section 5, 7, which we believe should include where the disaster management plans exist for the venue. We'd like to see a Section 5 included, and it should state where the disaster management plans exist for the venue. We further recommend that under Chapter 2, Section 5, 13, that you should include a Section 13, which would be a municipal disaster management center must, on notification of any high-risk event classification, perform a disaster risk assessment and inform the commissioner of the result of such assessment within 21 days of such classification. I believe by adding that section, it will add value to the bill or to the act. Section 7C, a high-risk safety certificate should only be issued if the municipal disaster management center is of the view that such a certificate should include sufficient disaster preparedness for the event or the venue. This is especially critical when reading Section 8.4c. Section 8. Prescribed criteria and other requirements to be met to qualify for a stadium or a venue safety certificate. In this regard, one should look at Section 8.c, complicates the issuing of such certificate by local authorities, if you look at Section 12. The question is whether a safety certificate could be issued if compliance is not yet in place. It is difficult to imagine that the local authority would run the risk of issuing a safety certificate when it knows that the ministers, as mentioned in Sections 8.2, have issued requirements which the stadium or the venue involved does not yet comply with. Clarity is needed on how the issuing of requirements by the ministers will influence the content of safety certificates compiled by local authorities and the commissioner. And perhaps, you know, the future requirements and the due dates for compliance with such future requirements should be mentioned in the certificate, but not determine whether the certificate will be issued or not. If at all possible, some form of national standardization on the contents of safety and grading certificates should be encouraged and enforced as a national standard. Sections 9 and 10. When a new stadium or extension to an existing stadium is done, the impact of this must be considered from a disaster risk viewpoint, as this may change the disaster risk profile of the area in which the stadium is being considered or built. This may in turn have a drastic negative impact on the disaster preparedness of that particular municipality to cope with a disaster in that specific area and may cause the municipality to amend its disaster classification for the area. Section 11. The commissioner should only be permitted to issue a high-risk safety certificate after consultation with the Municipal Disaster Management Center, who should further consult with other relevant municipal services, such as, for example, building services or the fire services. Section 14. Point 4b, the appointment of inspectors is open to misinterpretation. The term, at least one of the persons appointed, is unclear about its application. The question arises whether it applies to at least one of the persons appointed by a single local authority or to at least one of the persons appointed at some other level or scale. And we believe you should therefore insert by any other single local authority. While it is accepted that a medical qualification would be helpful in inspecting event safety, other skills such as occupational health and safety or building safety inspection might be even more useful. And that is certainly our recommendation in this regard, that the skills of inspectors be expanded upon. Section 16. It is not immediately clear which party will be responsible for secretariat services required for the Event Safety and Security Planning Committee. The authorized member should be assigned in Section 16.4 with a duty to enlist secretariat services for the committee and to write correspondence on behalf of the committee. We can expect the assigned person as a chairperson to do it, but certainly they should just make a provision that he assigns that to a person, to some person. Section 17, in Section 17, 1B3, the reference to emergency service representation is in the singular, while it is most unlikely that more than one emergency service will be involved. The reference should be in the plural, we recommend, and the references to other stakeholders may also need to be in the plural. The decision-making process of the committee is not described in Section 17. The question that may arise is on what basis decisions should be made by the committee. This certainly can become a contentious point. Will consensus decision-making be required in the planning phase, or will the authorized member always have a veto right on all decisions based on the powers of the authorized member, as described in Section 16.4D? Does it imply that a SAPS captain will always be able to overrule medical doctors on issues of emergency medical care, structural engineers on safe construction measures, and transport engineers on traffic management? The whole issue of safety versus security applies here. A fire escape locked with a lock and chain is secure, but not safe at all. A basis for decision-making should be described in Section 17 is our recommendation. If consensus decision-making is deemed to be an inappropriate model, some recourse should be offered to committee members who cannot, out of professional duty, agree with the decision made by the authorized member. And we believe that a bit of leeway should be provided for if there should be disagreement. We look at the plans in 17 and 18. There seems to be confusion regarding the event safety and security planning and the documentation plan that needs to produce, and there's, you know, different terminology used. And you can therefore compare Section 17 and 18, where it seems there are two different types of plan, when in actual fact, it's in actual fact the same plan being mentioned. It is suggested that clarity on the distinction between the two types of plan be provided, rather than use the same name if it's a single plan being referred to. It's my reading that it's probably just one plan being referred to, but different terminology leads to some ambiguous meaning there. Then we look at Section 19. In Section 19, 3, 5, 6, and 7, we recommend that you insert original and valid before a clear discretion card, and the same suggestion also applies to Section 21 relating to vehicle and driver accreditation. Section 26, the appeal board could be dominated by security-focused services with little representation on safety-focused services. The head of the National Disaster Management Center, representing disaster management and fire brigade service at national level, in collaboration with a person of similar rank within the National Department of Health responsible for the coordination of emergency medical services, should also be, we believe, be able to nominate the person or persons to serve on the appeal board, just to create a balance. Then lastly, we'd like to just mention that a national schedule of events should be made available electronically on a web-enabled time-adjusting geographic information system with a temporal database. An electronic submission system may be developed to further speed up communication, because we can see this, if it should be enforced, can be quite a laborious task. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I'm fortunate that we've received your input this morning, your document. It's quite elaborate, and should have, as you said, at least if we'd received it maybe on Friday, so that we go through it and were able to refer to this section that you're quoting. But nevertheless, we'll take questions from members, and then we'll afford the opportunity to our lawyers here to say something on the document. Yes, sir.
Chairperson, yes. No, we received the document, I think, last week or the week before last, because I received a copy some time ago already. So, yes, I made a study of it too. First of all, Chairperson, let me say about our athletes and, you know, I'm really saddened by the way in which that lady was treated. It's not, as you said, it's not that we don't want her to be tested. but the way things are done. I think it was degrading and demeaning. And really, in fact, they are arriving tomorrow, I think. And we must go and give that lady a hero's welcome, as far as I'm concerned. She is our hero. That's the first one. Secondly, I just want to apologize for the absence of Mr. Van der Linde. He's attending a sports meeting in Georgia this morning, so he's busy working while I'm here. Then, coming back to this presentation, Chairperson, you can see this man is from Port Elizabeth. And so it was, it's thought-provoking, and I think it must be seriously considered, the things that are mentioned here. The wise men came from the East, Chairperson, and the Port Elizabeth is in the East. So my question really is, I have a question to our legal people here, because I think many of these things, I don't even want to mention one chairperson, should be included or should be, expanded upon. And therefore, I would like to listen to our legal people. What do they say about these recommendations? Because I agree with many of them, chairperson.
Thank you. Chairperson, I just want the gentleman to clarify me on the first page, the term emergency services, disaster management and fire brigade should not be seen as part of it. Really, if you could clarify, are they not being treated as emergencies or emergency service people? Because to me, if each municipality has its disaster management, most of these stadiums belong to municipalities. So definitely, when there is an event, the municipality will definitely be informed that there is going to be an event. And all these people who render these services, who are employed by the municipality, are supposed to be part and parcel of this planning and to be informed. But if you could clarify me that these people are not being treated as emergency services, then I'll understand. But if they are, if they are cited, what have you, that they can't participate, then to me they are essential services. Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm not sure that there is another question.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. I agree with the co-chair. It's a very good document, indeed. A very good document. But the question that Comrade Tikora asked you on your first page on chapter one, the term emergency services should not be defined to include disaster management or any other department which is not an emergency department. I'm talking, unfortunately, from a position of being one of the people who were dealing with the Disaster Management Act in local government. The Disaster Management Act had assumed that emergency services should be part of that big army that is going to tackle issues of disaster management. Even in their joint operations center, disaster management should be part of that, so that a response on health, a response on anything, and then these emergency services should form that part of that quick response to at least stabilize the life and in other instances to save the life. Now, I want to get you very clear on you're saying they should not be defined to include disaster management or any other department which is not an emergency medical services. And then any other department which is not an emergency services, what is that department that you're talking about? The other thing is... Fire. fire is part of the medical emergency. Because if there is a 911 crash, first thing that goes there is emergency services to save the life, it's ambulances, and then it's fire responsible, at least to go and distinguish fire as those things are going on there. Now, I want to know how are you talking about these things as, in my view, that you want them to be separated. Because by virtue of having that joint operation center, the joint operation center includes fire, includes health, includes police, it includes even some members of the organizers, it even includes the planners of the stadium, so that they must show them quickly where are the quick exits and all those other things. So I want to understand, in your understanding, maybe I have a different understanding, and then when you have a better understanding too. Then you go down on paragraph 2 to say, essential services are not always within administration of local authority, as are so in the definition of the essential services. In more rural areas, electricity could be example, be delivered directly by ESCOM, while other essential services such as waste management could be privatized. It is possible that the definition of essential services to also provide for provision of essential services by other CAs other than local government or by parastatals or the private sector be revised. You're absolutely right. But I want to accept ESCOM. In my understanding, I'm talking to you as the practitioners of the Disaster Management Act on local government, because that act comes from it's sponsored, and then it's a local government act. Corporate governance. Yes. They were mindful even in some of the rural, the urban areas, that in Port Elizabeth you'll find other parts of that township, electricity is not provided by the municipality. Electricity is provided by ESCOM. And that is why you find our people in a huge confusion. When they arrive at the municipality, municipality says, but this is ESCOM. They say, but no, it's not ESCOM, it's you. And there is that huge problem. But somewhere there, in that act, there is where they have deliberately put ESCOM in, so that when there is a huge disaster, ESCOM in their operation center must be able to switch off that area that is burning for quick stabilization of the fire in that area. I assume that it would rather be placed in a different way here, that ESCOM as part of the disaster management can be, but we'll hear from Fabian what are they saying. But I know that ESCOM is part of the disaster management because ESCOM in many instances, if not by and large instances here in South Africa, ESCOM is a direct service provider of the electricity in some townships, and then in others, in municipalities that are having capacity. In the advent of what you call RED, which you know, it is only that phasing in process that is beginning to say electricity must belong to these metropolitan cities that have the capacity, Nelson Mandela, Joburg, Pretoria, and Ekurhuleni, and all that. But the rest of the other smaller areas, like my town there, ESCOM still plays a very important role there in as far as the supply of electricity is concerned. But my last take from you, sir, is on... My last page is on, although your pages are not numbered yet, but it's on section 6. Section, point 6, section 8. when you said prescribed criteria and other requirements to be met to qualify for a stadium or a venue safety certificate. This section 8.3 complicates the issuing of such a certificate by local authority. Section 12, the question is whether safety certificate could be issued if compliance is not yet met or what. I think it is a very fundamental question. But the reading of that is that when you go and apply for a license, you pass that license first. Then you are issued out with a driver's license. But maybe you have a point here. But in the manner you say, the issuing of certificate, it can obliterate compliance. The very same essence of the issuing of certificate says, certificate will be issued when all these criteria have been met. If these criteria have not been met, therefore the certificate is not issued. But I want you to show me there where it is making an assumption that a certificate is going to be issued in spite of some of the criteria that have not been met. Because it will be dangerous if that is the case, Mr. Adam. I agree with you. And then the question of safety says, close all these valves. After you close the valve, then we'll issue out the certificate because you have complied, especially to issues of security. That I don't understand very clear. I'll be glad if you on section 11, on point 11, section 17. You say the decision making process of the committee is not described in section 17. The decision making process is not described in section 17. The question that may arise is on what basis decision must be made by the committee? On what basis should the decision make a committee make a decision? Will consensus decision making be required in the planning phase, or will it be authorized members always have a vote right on all decision basis on powers of the ordinance? That's what I want to understand this question that you're raising. Because the Act, when I read it, I'm happy that you raised this thing. The Act was saying there will be all these stakeholders, the police and what and what and what. And as and when they develop that approach, everybody is going to spell out very clear his area and say, these are the things that are required in my area. And therefore, because there is one member who raises the issue of the police and say, if one police is not like the rugby, can just undermine that process. And here, you are raising it in a very subtle way, but differently. You're saying somebody might undermine even discussion that took place there and just roughshod those decisions. But I want to say, here, it is not a decision of a person, but it's a decision of how the different stakeholders in there present their case. And then when they present their case, and they say, police, what is your view on this? This is the stadium category one, which is a very serious and then emotional a game that is going to play. What is going to be your response to this? Emergency is going to present its matters, and then the police are saying, going to present ours, we're going to beef up the police, and then and all those other things. And after you have done that, they would rather be a discussion where they are saying, no, emergency, I don't think that we need one emergency ambulance. We think we need about 8 of the emergency ambulances. And then can you be in a position to do that? If you cannot be in a position to do that, let us see what can you do on that. Maybe your interpretation, when you explain very clear to me. But here, it is not one person making a decision. It's all of you taking a decision on the discussion of each and every element that plays a role in that center, having presented a comfortable view that is addressing the fears and what the bill intends to address. If the bill says there should be an emergency, and then you said, but we don't have an emergency ambulance, and then we are struggling, and then we are in Limpopo and all that, they'll say, but how do we say such a big event when there are no emergencies? We'll rather go and ask for ambulances. They must be driven from somewhere, because we cannot have a Pirates Kaizer Chiefs game where there's not even a single ambulance. Then comes to doctors and these paramedic people and all that. Also those for quick response to any other emergency. Maybe the requirement will be we need at least 15 of those people. When you said you have one and about 5 people get involved, one person who's a professional emergency service will not be in a position to deal with 5 people in an event, but you would say in that forum, can't we just increase this, because really it's a dangerous exercise that we can take. We can gamble, but it will be very dangerous. I have thought that center is a center of discussion where anybody cannot roughshod of anybody's decision, because they're not experts of all that. When you, as local government, you're raising your matters of disaster management, who are the police to come and tell you about how the disaster management is done and then and all this? Because you are an expert in those. You have to persuade them, and they have to understand. If the police are saying 5 people who are the police will not be able to control that crowd, and therefore we feel we must increase our manpower, and then there should be at least 20. Disaster management cannot say, no, there must not be 20, because it will be a view of the police. They have the capacity and the understanding of what should be a number that's reasonable to be able to assist them in an event there could be any other thing at that stadium.
Yes, sir. Would you give me an opportunity just to respond to some of them, because I may just forget as we're getting deep into it. Is there a possibility that I could respond to some of the questions
okay,
that you have?
I was going to give you the last one. I thought that you are noting the some of them, as and when I speak, I triggered something very interesting to you, and you too, you have done that to me. That's why I was writing here. So, but all of them, I'll give you the last point. The last point is on the last page. The appeal board could dominate by security forces, services, with little representation of safety-focused services. I don't understand your point there. Completely, I don't understand your point. You must, unless you think how the Joint Operations Center is constituted, and then the police are dominant there, and therefore they're taking a decision. But if it's a Joint Operations Center, in a manner that all of us understand what the Joint Operations Center is, there'll be no dominancy of another figure by another figure there. But we will gladly welcome some of the things that show that the police might take over that operations center and decide alone on their own on that thing. I think I'll be glad to do that. Thank you very much. I'm sorry to ask you quite a few of those.
Sydney, just another correction. You referred to me as Adams. I'm Pillay. Adams is the person that wrote the document, who signed it. He's the president of the MISA, but I'm representing them here this morning. Okay. Thanks. I'd just like to start. I think what I'd like to say is that we've noted that disaster management is included in the definitions, both under emergency services and essential services. And that already is going to present you with a problem, because there could be confusion in terms of where should it be an essential service, should it be an emergency service. Our recommendation is that you take it out there, okay, and that you rather include disaster management. Now, disaster management is listed in the definition, but not the full definition, because it doesn't in actual fact give you the full value. Disaster management is both a proactive and a reactive service. The proactive side is we involve in emergency planning. So before the event happens, we're involved in that. in preparedness, in emergency planning, and there's a reactive side of us as well. Should there be an emergency and it goes into, not a normal emergency, an incident, but it goes into disastrous proportions, we have a reactive responsibility and we respond as well. But it's encapsulated with our definition, and my recommendation is that the definition used here stops short of it. They should include the full definition of disaster management. In other words, eliminate disaster management in both essential services as well as emergency services, and describe disaster management under disaster management. And then what I'm saying to you is I have here with me the Disaster Management Act 2002 under its definition. I would like to see that full definition encapsulated there.
I hear what you say. It's exactly what the co-chair had a problem on the cross-reference of a definition last week.
Yeah.
She said, I don't have a problem with that, but you are making as if there is no existing legislation, and therefore you are saying there is an existing definition. I don't have a problem with this, but your definition, let your definition extract what is there and then include there, then it means we are comfortable, because if you don't do that, there is a portion that you are cutting through in our understanding, in our own definition of a disaster management. That's good. Gideon, you have heard that, and then we'll come back to you for that one.
Okay. The second one, in terms of where you put the question to me, in terms of essential services, I think what we are saying to you is, and I just want to refer to the Act here, the Act gives one in the impression that essential services is only the forte of the local government. Okay, the way it's written, because it says here, includes those departments responsible for electrical, water, sewage, and waste removal utilities in the administration of a local authority. All we are saying is we can see problems coming in here, because in some instances it could be outsourced, could be privatized, and it could even be ESCOM. So just write your definition of essential services a bit broader other than just local authorities. And just, you know, make sure so that you, in that eventuality, that you deal with a municipality that is outsourced its sewage service, I mean its cleansing service, for example, it will include that private sector. And then where that local authority has not got basically electricity service and it's under ESCOM, just include that, like a utility or a parastatal as well.
Now, I understand what you're saying. You think for this bill to have a sense and intention to respond to these things is that if ESCOM is in the ambit of other people, saying, and even if, and even those that are not in necessarily in local government like ESCOM and all that, if this strikes, they would be compelled to be part of this response and all that. So Gideon knows how we're going to. We'll, I think Gideon, that's a valid point, because you can't say an ambulance in one municipality and then outsource municipalities because it's a Donald Lee's tender. And Donald Lee said, I've got nothing to do to attend to a game, and they have to pay huge amount of money and all that. Now, you say, and even if those are not essentials that are falling within the municipality, let us draw them in, because municipalities survive on them whilst they are outsourced. Now, if they are outsourced and there is this kind of a thing, and they need to be brought in for them also to play a role while they are outsourced. I think I understand that point. We'll hear what the lawyers are going to say, but I agree with you on that one. Comrade Cindy wants to, because he's saying he's forgetting. Ask him now, Comrade Cindy. I've got Waterman. I don't want the DA Waterman. I've got Waterman.
Mr. Chairperson, I'd like to continue then with section, I think it's section 17 there, where basically indicated the decision-making process of the committee is not described in section 17. I think what we might mention here is you could see that it's becoming a problem because it doesn't. It's either you need to just specify there and say decision-making will be by consensus-making as far as possible. And in the event of there being a tie in that, or in votes, that the chairperson has got the veto. So this is not coming out clearly, and one is just trying to look at such a situation, you know. So that's actually what we are saying here. In section 26 about the appeal board, we can just have a look at that as well. It basically says that the appeal board will consist of 5 ministers appointed by the minister who possess special knowledge and expertise relating to safety and security at sports and educational bills. So the way it's being read here is it possibly could be a slant only on safety and security from the ambit of being possibly only police personnel. And we're saying just widen that and make sure you take also into account maybe disaster management and emergency medical services as well, so that there is good representation on that appeal board and not necessarily just SAPS.
Maybe Gideon will tell us on that appeal board. If you make an appeal board, the Joint Operations Center Combat Syndicate is different aspect from different sectors. Now, when you put an appeal board, you put an appeal board of people who don't have a clue of those specified different sectors. How are they making a ruling on that? Let's say you put an appeal board of sports, and there are issues of police there, that the police are saying 1, 2, 3, and 4 are the causes of all these other things, and then the sports cannot be able to articulate precisely on those functions because our functions rest with the police. I think the appeal board, and even if it could be 5 or 4 people, key people that are playing role in the disaster management or elsewhere, have to be part of the appeal board for them to be able to enrich whoever is going to handle the appeal, so that he must have expect from us. Unless he's going to say, okay, why is it an appeal board? But we'll ask other people to make submission and all that. But I'm not a believer of submission. I'm a believer of the interaction with you, because as and when you speak, you trigger many of the things in my mind. But when you give me a paper, I read this paper, say that, no, there's nothing, and then it goes. But I think that point, you'll respond to that point. And then it's a point that has to be addressed. It's a concern that is valid.
Let me just take you back to the emergency services and management and safety disaster management. According to this bill, Chapter 1, there is a definition of disaster management. It means a process of planning and implementation of the measures referred to in Section 1 of the Disaster Management Act 2002. But you are saying, and further than that, then essential services, they are saying means, in fact, or emergency services means in relation to a sports or recreational event. Now, my question will be to say, what do you think will be a problem in the implementation, probably process, if in relation to a sports or recreational event, disaster management department is included? Because I think this is qualifying the definition of emergency services in this bill. Otherwise, there is a definition above. Then what is the problem if it is included?
The problem is, as it is in the bill now, it doesn't spell out the full business of disaster management. It falls short. So we are saying it's only gone halfway. Go out and include the same as it's defined in the Disaster Management Act 5-7 of 2002. The whole complete definition of disaster management must be included in there. In that way, you will not have confusion.
No, Mr. Blake, my co-chair says, on page 1, there on almost above, on 20, it says, I think it's 20, it says, disaster management means a process of planning and implementation of a measure referred to in Section 1 of the Disaster Management Act. They say, if we define the disaster management on this day, it might be elaborative, it might make big, but when we are referring
to the disaster management original bill, then we are able to define in detail what the disaster management is all about. I think here they're saying that they didn't include the whole definition, but they're saying in terms of the law protocol, they're making a reference to the existing act, and therefore the existing act here cannot probably be defined in detail, but you make reference to that existing act, and therefore when you go to that existing act, it is clearly verbatim to the point. Explain what disaster management is all about. What is your point in that?
I think the problem we're having is that we're trying to avoid confusion coming about. The moment you read the bill and you see it's included in both, it's going to bring an area of concern. So we're saying, in a way to circumvent that, is leave it out there and include disaster management on its own. And even in this bill, you don't necessarily have to refer to the Disaster Management Act. Just put the definition in its full entity there and include, for example, that it is a process of preventing and reducing the risk of disasters, mitigating the severity or consequences of disasters, emergency preparedness, a rapid and effective response to disasters, and post-disaster recovery and rehabilitation. The full definition. Then it's, and limited. And then you will not have a problem.
Okay. But the only problem with you is a cross-reference, which is very short. But if it is a cross-reference, you want that cross-reference and then to be full. Okay. Coming to that.
Can we get some from our legal advisor?
Chairperson, before we get some, listening to Mr. Belay, he also had a problem with a definition of a venue. And while he was talking, I was now thinking of events that we have in South Africa. And one of those events is the Comrades Marathon. Now, if you look at the definition here, will it cover an event such as the Comrades Marathon? The word, venue.
Good morning, sir. Thank you. No, Chairperson, on the issue that was raised also earlier on in terms of the essential services and also making reference to the outsourcing, and because if a particular municipality outsources its responsibility in terms of the disaster management or any function thereof, I thought that it would be a package at any instance whereby that particular service provider will not abdicate its responsibility by saying this does not fall within my ambit, because surely they are covered in terms of the law. And secondly, you see, these definitions might not go into town broadly because of the fact that surely the legal drafters in their minds, I would assume that they do have a thing that says there are certain laws which, by its very nature, you need not to include them when you are introducing a particular bill because it is covered. And surely the people of the various departments, they do have their legal sections where if they are given a responsibility, they will fall back to those principal acts, like the Act of 2000, the Disaster Management. Once they are included, for instance, in a particular board or given a responsibility, surely it will trigger in their minds that certain principles or clauses of that act they should have to observe when dealing with a particular matter. So I'm saying there is no way that if a municipality can outsource a responsibility, and then when in a case of a disaster or in eventuality, a person can say, no, this does not belong to me, because in their mind, consciously, they deal with human beings to save their lives and so on. So I'm saying this elaborative definition, which the presenters wants them to be included, it's conventional that in their minds they should know that it's their part of the responsibility that they should observe that. Otherwise, every presenter will fight for his or her own definition to be included, despite the cross-reference that you are referring to as co-chairperson. Thank you.
I'm not sure whether you want to comment on what you said.
other than to say, Madam Chair, my submission here to you this morning is bona fide, meaning in good faith, and it's in actual fact just meant to take, I'm not here standing on a platform to want to sell my services. That's not the intention. The intention is basically to say to you, I want to ease the way so that there can be more clarity on the legislation. That's my intention, and it's bona fide.
Thank you very much. I think we'll take some input. In fact, personally, in my own, is this what I was actually saying to you. If you say we must exclude disaster management as an essential service, you are saying it because you think it can provide essential services by its nature. That was my question. I thought you were going to say that. Then maybe the definition and so on, by its nature as a department, it can't even... in sports and recreation, it cannot. I thought you were going to clarify us on that one.
Madam Chair, you see, if you put disaster management under an essential, it's not an essential service. It's not an emergency service either. You see, but we are a focal point within the municipality where we have contact with emergency services and essential services. It's like a one-stop shop. If you basically phone my disaster management center, I've got access from my center to all the essential services of the municipality as well as the emergency services. But we're not in actual fact. So what we are saying is don't take it out and prevent confusion and put disaster management as a definition on its own. That's what we're saying. Because it's not an essential service, but we have the access to the essential services when we basically are part of that committee.
Can we hear from our...
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Members. First and foremost, let me just apologize to Mr. Patrick Ronenhout, expert when it comes to technical aspects of this bill. Unfortunately, he couldn't make it today. He is abroad in London, but he will join us at a later stage. Having said that and having listened to the inputs, surely we do agree that the inputs of disaster management this morning is very fruitful and useful. And we would like to also comment that we agree with the comments that the majority of the input should seriously be considered in principle. However, there are different permutations with regard to certain aspects, which I just would, from my side as well as my colleagues here, would like to just to sensitize you. First and foremost, you know, when we drafted the bill, obviously we had the Disaster Management Act. We took the provisions of that particular act to heart. So therefore, we made a specific cross-references to that particular act in our bill. And we feel that, you know, in the way we've drafted it, it does not at all, contravene the current provisions as contained in the Disaster Management Act. As a matter of fact, we actually honor the particular act by making adequate references, and also what we're actually saying is why we've included disaster management as part, for instance, of essential services and emergency services. This is for the sake of this particular legislation. There's a certain grouping of people or departments which actually constitutes those particular definitions. And for our purposes, it's really important that we group them together. So if we, and on the one hand, give honor to disaster management in terms of the act, surely that explains itself. Therefore, you know, the definition of disaster management cannot be influenced or cannot be actually swayed in such a manner that people misconstrue it. Safe to say that we feel, for the sake of when the persons involved in this particular legislation, when they need to fulfill certain tasks, as for instance, coordinated by the Event Safety and Security Planning Committee, they should see that, you know, disaster management is part of essential services as well as emergency services, in order to fulfill the requirements and the aims and objectives of our piece of legislation. So, to my mind, it does not create an uncertainty. It does not create a situation unbearable for disaster management because they are defined in terms of the legislation. We made the appropriate cross-references, and I think that is our take on that. Then with regard to, yes, Chairperson, where you've actually alluded to the definition of essential services and the ESCOM, possibility that some essential services are not usually provided or may not be usually be provided by a local authority. I do agree we should revisit these definitions to elaborate to include, where possible, any permutation which actually should cover, those instances as well. The decision-making process is referred to in Section 17 of the bill. I can just say that, from my part, on my behalf, I would say that, we're going to create regulations as well. These regulations will spell out to a far more greatly the roles of the decision-making process. What you see here is the Event Safety and Security Planning Committee must consider. As a committee in total, they must do this. They must prepare an event-specific written safety and security plan, for instance. The decision-making process is actually the Event Safety and Security Planning Committee. They assign specific tasks. Obviously, the authorized member, now being the chairperson of that particular body, he will definitely have a leading role to play. But there will be a cooperative manner of taking those decisions. As I've already alluded to, it will be dealt with in specific regulations in this regard as well. The Comrades Marathon, is it really covered by our Act? We have a definition, Honorable Lee, which refers to event. Event says means sporting, entertainment, recreational, or similar activities hosted at a stadium venue or along a route. Along a route includes a comrades marathon as well. Then also,
then we also refer to a venue. An event on the one side, then a venue on the other side. Just look whether venue we cover a thing like
which page are you referring to? Definition? On page 1.
Page 5.
Where is it?
The last one.
The last one. Okay.
You see, Chairperson, these venues will actually differ from time to time. So one can actually not commit yourself and say the venue relative to a comrades marathon will be as follows. So we're saying along a route that actually takes care of the safety, it picks up the safety and security requirements of this particular piece of legislation applicable to along a route, like for instance Argus, comrades. And so venue in itself, you can see it doesn't actually include the comrades marathon.
And let's just clarify, Chair, that there are two things. One is the venue. The other one is the event. The event is defined to include the things like the Comrades Marathon, the August tours, and so on. So where we define a venue, there would be a specific structure that is built there that covers a venue. So even if it's along a route, where there is a comprehensive marathon, there can be a structure that is built that will be known as a venue. But a combat marathon will be an event. So if it takes place along a road, it will be covered as an event. So everything that takes place along that road will be covered as an event. But where it has a structure that is built, that structure will be covered by the definition of venue. So there is nowhere where something will fall in between. There will be a venue covered. There will also be an event covered. So what takes place during that event along the route will be covered. So I think both scenarios are covered.
Jefferson, then just lastly from my side, the reference to the billboard, the special knowledge of safety and security as opposed to disaster management. We agree with the proposal that the disaster management should also be part and parcel of the appeal board. We just to cite an example, where the bill reflects on the appointment, for instance, of an admitted or practicing attorney, with an advocate with at least 5 years' experience. We said it's going to be 2 years now. We can include a similar provision to the effect which will dictate the appointment of a member or a person elected by disaster management with at least, say, for instance, 2 years' experience to fulfill the role of a member on the particular board. So in other words, you'll have an attorney, you'll have the disaster management, that's two, so you'll have another 5 members, who will have safety and security expertise in this regard.
Okay.
Sorry, just the last point here, Chairperson, and that is, there was also a concern that, for instance, the authorized member, wherever he takes a decision, and it's a very arbitrary decision, and anybody then who feels, dissatisfied with the decision can actually also appeal against that particular decision in terms of this provision. So, to a great extent, that is also captured by the particular bill.
Yes, ma'am. So that ties in with the point I made the other day. We can appeal, but there's no time limit within which the appeal has to be heard. So the appeal can be lodged and ignored forevermore. Mr. I've forgotten your surname. He did say we could cover it in the regulations, but I'm not sure that should be covered in the regulations, because then why are the other provisions covered in the Act? Should it not be also included in the Act that the appeal board has to hear the matter by a certain time before the event happens? Otherwise, they'll ignore it until after the event is already finished, and the appeal will be meaningless.
Yes, Chair.
Chairperson, I do agree, because the bill actually states you can submit your appeal within 14 days. Surely then the bill should also, explain within how many days the decision maker, from an appeal perspective, should actually apply his or her mind.
But it's consistent, Gideon. You make an appeal to the court after it has judged you. They will tell you that your appeal is going to be after so many days, and then it's none that violates that. But I wonder. What has made you not to put it in the business?
We actually bargained on the fact that, we're going to regulate these provisions. But I must admit, in hindsight, having a look at the fact that, you have a timeline for lodging an appeal, surely, you do not want to have processes dragged out unnecessarily, Chairperson. So therefore, for the sake of transparency, for the sake of consistency, one would like rather to include it in the bill up front as opposed to the regulations, because you deal with the finer points pertaining to the regulations in the way the appeal board will function. So we do not foresee any problems for incorporating that as proposed.
Yeah, check on that and then we'll see. The appeal, after how long it could be heard and all these other things. I think it will be better. But Gideon, the issue of regulations on the committee that is going to be in place in the planning committee, I think you're right on that way. While his concern might be right, but when you're dealing with the regulations, now you're dealing with the finer details of how the committee should look like, what are the specialists that have to be in that appeal board, and then I think it belongs to the regulations. In any event, those regulations, too, is going to be a canvas view. Disaster management will have a set of regulations, and they must comment on them. But I think let's leave the issue of the planning and who chairs that and all those other things in the planning committee, but taking clearly into consideration that what he raised as different specialists there, not one person running over all these different sectors there. I think the point is the right point. It's the right point.
No, thank you very much. Disaster management representative, we will take a tea break for 10 minutes, and then when we come back, Boxing South Africa will then table its presentation before this committee. So at 11:30, Boxing South Africa will start talking, whether we are here or not. We can break for 10.
Thank you.